Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bexter, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hello to you. I speak to you from the past. In my time, it is Saturday night. I am getting ready to do a DJ gig, actually. But don't get too excited. It's just in our kitchen, of course. We're doing a DJ gig live on TikTok. And then yesterday night, we did a disco, which was fun. We're going to stop doing them soon. And I'll miss them. We're going to do our last one on April the 9th, if you fancy it. And I'm taking requests. So if you've got any song you'd like me to sing, let me know. Oh, hold on a second. Yes, Ray? Okay, thank you. Yeah, I'll wash that. Okay. I had a funny thing, though. I did actually leave the house once this week. I went to sing...
Mama.
Hold on, Ray. I'll do it in a minute. I went to sing Groove Jet on The One Show. And it's quite funny because I left the house. So, you know, singing outside of the kitchen... And guess what they'd made the set look like? That's right, a kitchen. And it wasn't even as nice as my kitchen. It was a sort of photo, what do you call it, computer-generated kitchen with, like, some bread out on the side. I mean, come on, I would never leave bread out on the side when I'm doing a disco. Anyway, my guest this week. She actually did a very helpful thing since we've spoken, because I have to confess, I think if I was speaking to you a week ago, I would have probably said...
Mama.
Hold on, Ray Ray. I'm nearly done, Sweet Pea. I probably would have said I was speaking to Giovanna Fletcher, but she very helpfully put a little post up saying that it's Giovanna to rhyme with Savannah. So, yes, Giovanna Fletcher. So I had a lovely conversation with Giovanna. We've met a few times over the years. She's always been completely gorgeous. And, I wanted to speak to her because... She obviously came across so brilliantly and I'm a Celebrity and has been doing such brilliant things with her podcast, Happy Mum, Happy Baby. And I thought I'd turn the tables and ask her some questions and it was very, very nice. And so I'm going to be sitting down having a listen in while I'm actually dressed in a ridiculously OTT party outfit for someone who's only staying in their kitchen for the evening. And I don't know what Ray wanted. I'll have to go and see what he wanted. I don't actually know. He gave me some things to be washed while I was speaking to you, but I don't think that's why he's persistent in speaking to me. Anyway, I would normally say I'm going to go and make a cup of tea, but I'm actually thinking I might go and find Richard and see if he can make me a margarita. What do you think? Is that a good idea? If you're listening to this on a Monday morning, you'd probably say no. If you're listening to this on a Friday night, you'd probably say yes. All right, darlings, see you on the other side. Thank you for coming and thank you for tuning in. Thank you very much for speaking to me this evening.
Not at all, thank you.
I was really looking forward to it because I wonder if you have this with your podcast, where it's basically like the best chats I've had in the last year. I've probably been recording my podcast.
Completely.
Yeah, so a bit of space and time.
Yeah, and I think when we started making them remote and doing it like this, I was really worried about what they would be like because I think there's something about being face-to-face with people and reassuring them that everything's fine, you're in a set, you know, it's, I think there's something very different about being together. But actually, it's been incredible. It's been so nice having these conversations and having something that can take you out of the little bubble that you're in and remind you that everyone is going through a similar situation or the same experience in terms of COVID, but different versions of it, different variations. So I have found the podcast chats really quite therapeutic and lovely to just get away from it all, really, and to have that bit of a breather.
Yeah. And I suppose as well, we've sort of been cast into this very strange space where your day job and who you are outside of parenting and the parenting is just all, the lines are blurred. So I think for everybody, you've sort of had this, everything sort of thrown into real, well, it sort of throws it into relief how sort of murky it is in a way, because you're suddenly thinking, I don't really know. There's been so many times where I felt like where I end and the other part of me takes over for whether going to work or doing motherly stuff. It's just, there's no definition. And I found that I definitely struggled with that in the last year.
Definitely. And I think there's this big thing about how much you're used to doing, like, especially creatively, how productive you're used to be. And I think there was a thing early on in lockdown that I've just realised I'm not going to be that productive. I'm not going to be doing as much as I was, and I have to kind of lower my expectations of myself, which was fine for the first lockdown, I would say. But as it's gone on, you then have that frustration of not being able to do it anymore and kind of when can I do the work that I'm meant to be doing and, you know, commit to the stuff that I've already signed up to do and in terms of books and things like that. So it has been really challenging working out how to juggle those things. Feel like you're doing anything in the way that you normally would, whether that's parenting or work.
I know.
You know what I mean? Are you giving anything 100%?
I know. I keep on feeling like, you know, when there's cartoons where it's like a little kid running at a big kid and the big kid's just holding their forehead. So they're sort of running with all their might and the little one's just not getting anywhere because that big hand's on your forehead. I felt like that a few times.
That's so true.
But I want to talk to you about, well, there's so many things I want to talk to you about, but I'll start with what was happening in your life when you had your first baby. What were you up to?
So I was writing books by that point. So I'd written, I'd written two. I'd written Billy and Me and You're the One That I Want. Mm-hmm. Because I can remember having to go back. So I had to sort out what I was doing with Buzz when he was 6 months old because I had a deadline and I had to get back to writing. So that's why I know that. I was writing in my day was very relaxed, I would say. So I would get up in the morning, probably around 10-ish, come downstairs, have breakfast, have a shower, get into a fresh pair of pyjamas, look over the, you know, go on social media or see what was happening in the news, read over what I'd done the day before, have breakfast, like have lunch, then maybe have a little nap because, you know, I'll be tired by then. And then probably get to work about 3 o'clock in the afternoon and then work solidly. So I feel like my routine back then was very different to what it is now. Now I feel like every second that I'm not with the kids has to count. I have to make sure that it's not, especially if they're not at school, if they're being looked after by someone else, I have to make sure that it is for a purpose, which is why I'm awful at things like getting my hair done or anything like that. It's just, you know, I don't know how you fit all that stuff in at all. So I don't. So every time I go to the hairdresser, I'm like, yeah, I've not been for a year. Sorry.
Wow. This is resonating with me hugely.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard, isn't it? Like knowing how you fit everything in and what the priorities are. And that's, you know what, that's just something that we've put on ourselves because no one has told us that that is the way that we have to live our lives.
Yeah.
That is just how we feel. My days pre-kids were very, very different. Quite chilled, I would say, because writing is a very I guess you do get a bit frustrated at times, especially if you're on deadline and you keep pushing forward. But I'd say it was quite chilled, carefree, but also focused, I would say.
Yeah, and I totally focused. I've used exactly that same phrase about making every minute count when you're away for your kids once you're working and you have them, because yeah, you feel this onus of like, well, it's got to mean something. What's the point of being apart from them if you're just going to sort of, you know, not be productive? So you do kind of get that. I think it actually really helped my focus actually with my work.
I do.
Yeah. And so you were on a deadline with a book when you just had
one. Yeah. So I think I would have had a book out a few months after he was born. Which would have been the second book. And then I would have had to, start writing so that it could be in with my publisher by the following, I just handed one in. That's right. Because then that book was out a little bit after Buzz was born. And then I had to start writing for the next one. It did feel like there was a countdown in terms of me when I had to get back to my desk. And we sorted it out with Tom's mum, actually, that she was going to come and look after him a few days a week. And at first, I did that typical thing where, and also I found it really hard because, so we'd sorted it out at 5 months. And for me, that's when Buzz, his personality really started to shine through.
Yeah.
You know, as you start to see more of who they are. The interaction is just amazing. The connection is so much richer. And all of a sudden, something's come along. Or not all of a sudden, because you know it's there, but it's sudden. It just feels sudden, and you're not going to be able to be there with them all the time. But we were lucky that Tom's mum, we were able to sort of employ her really, and she could look after Buzz, which was brilliant. Knowing that he was going to be with a grandma and someone that he really loved, and they still have an amazing bond now. But it's that thing of once you have this idea of what, you know, the plan in motion, what it's going to be like, and then once it's actually there and it's happening, it really hurts.
Yeah.
It hurts knowing that is the plan, and you're not going to have your baby a few days a week. And I try to do that typical thing of having Buzz here every day. So if Debbie was looking after him, you know, I'd take him off for a feed and I'd put him down for a nap, and I was still trying to do all of those things. So in the end, he started going to her house, which still meant I had to go off and express and stuff. But it meant that when he wasn't here, I could probably focus a lot better and get a lot more work done. Because otherwise your ear is always in the other room. Is he crying? Is she okay? Is she getting a little bit stressed with it? You know, it's
definitely.
Just... And then for her as well, I think if they were in her house, she could do things her way and not feel like I would be there listening in from the other room, judging or worrying. So that is what we started doing. It helped because we could get the job done.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you're saying there about that thing where, you know, their personality just starts to come out, because we're so encouraged to think about taking that time off when they're tiny and then getting your work set up actually in the bit where their needs really grow. And I remember working with a really good girlfriend of mine. She's a makeup artist, and she had kids that were probably already in double figures when we started working together. And she used to really struggle leaving them. And then when, you know, if we went away for work, and when I had Sunny, I remember her saying to me, it gets harder as they get older to leave them. And she was so right. You know, a child who's older, saying, like, crying, you know, my two-year-old's around, it really perfected the double, you know, the big sort of bottom lip quiver and tears, because that leaving them at that point, you know, when they're small, you can sort of, you know, a lot of their needs are quite easily met in terms of, you know, right temperature, food in their tummy, all those kind of things, sleep. But when they get older, they're a lot more aware of where you are. And also the things you can do with them grow, all the different scope. So missing out on stuff can be tricky.
Well, Catelyn Morano, she said on the podcast about the teenage years and how when it comes to teenagers, they might work up the courage to come to you once about a problem. And if you are not there for that one time, then that's it. That opportunity has gone.
Yes.
So it is interesting to think about how their demands or needs of us will change as time goes on.
Yeah, I think that's true about the teenage thing, actually. And I remember when you were talking, it reminded me when I was watching you on I'm a Celebrity, which we were hooked on in our house. It was brilliant. And there was one bit where you were missing the kids. And I can't remember who it was, but they said to you something like, yes, they will have changed so much in the time you've been here. It's like, wow, thank you, that's very comforting. I barely know you. You'll come back and they'll be like, who's that lady?
It was weird though, because for two of them, I hadn't seen them for 5 weeks. For the two-year-old, I'd seen him, it was about 3.5 weeks with him, but for Buzz and Buddy, it was 5 weeks, and it felt so huge, like such a huge amount of time. And I can remember coming through the door, and it is that weird thing of it was a bit like they changed, like their face, you just kind of want to touch them, and it's that thing of, I don't know if you've ever had it, but when you give birth and you take your baby home to your other children, they all of a sudden seem huge.
Yeah,
it's that
definitely.
Weird thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Time and your memory and everything, it's all kind of warped somehow. But yeah, I can remember, so I came home and the Christmas tree was already up, and the two-year-old just kind of pointed at the tree and goes, look, tree! And I was like, oh, you're talking and everything. But that then fades, you know.
And it does.
You know, what's the longest that you've ever been away from your boys?
I think the longest is actually about 10 days.
Yeah.
But I remember when, I can't remember who it was, one of them was very little and I was about to go away for work. And it wasn't my first baby. It might have been the third or the fourth one. And I was sort of seeking solace on the internet. So I sort of Googled, you know, leaving my baby. I think I was actually breastfeeding him at the time. So I was like, you know, looking. And it was just basically all these forums of women saying, well, you can go away and express milk like this. And you can. I mean, personally, I couldn't bear to leave my baby, but of course you could. There's definitely ways you could do it. It's just like that very sort of like, yeah, really, like, thanks a lot for that. Like, there's real solidarity. I think in times of need, probably stay away from those forums. They don't
the thing is
give
that
you what
I,
you need.
The boys were so excited to have me back. And the first thing they wanted me to do was sit with them and watch I'm a Celeb. They wanted to tell me about all the things that I'd done.
Yeah.
And actually, I think, isn't it great that my kids have been able to see me in another role, not just as mummy, as someone who goes off the edge of a cliff, who isn't scared of snakes and spiders, you know. So I do feel like actually it was so great for them to see me doing that.
Hell yeah, it's brilliant. And not just that, for you, 5 weeks away, like, look at the experience you got from it and how significant that is in your memories. But for them, 5 weeks, you know.
Yeah.
And they could see you as well. They weren't actually gone, you know, just they could still check in with what you're up to and be super engaged. It's not like, I know when one time when Richard went away a lot, when Sonny must have been about 2 years old, rather, and I had to keep Richard so present while he was gone. He was away for about 6 weeks and I had to keep going, oh, Daddy does this and Daddy that, just to keep him part of Sonny's everyday world. But Tommy could just say, look, there she is. That's what she's doing today.
They'd literally watch me at breakfast every day just to see what I've been up to the night before.
Which is brilliant. And I think that is inspiring to them, to see you not being scared and jumping with both feet and doing something for yourself like that. I mean, who doesn't want their mum to look like she's fearless? That's really inspiring, isn't it? And I wonder, as well, I was thinking, is it right that you have been together with Tom since you were 13?
We met when we were 13, yeah. We met at Sylvia's when we were 13, so Sylvia Young Theatre School. And we dated for 3 days, and then he dumped me for his ex-girlfriend.
Oh.
Yeah,
shocker. Oh, sorry to remind you of that time.
No, don't worry. And then we spent 2 years going, I like you, I don't like you, I like you, I don't like you. And then in year 11, we started going out again. We went out for a year, and at the end of the year, we broke up. And then we went our separate ways for about 2 years. And I dated someone else. He dated a few people. And I started Rose Bruford and he started the band around the same time. And I was dating someone who was in the Metropolitan Police at the time. And he was just not bothered about what I was doing, couldn't care less. Whereas Tom was just always engaged, really excited about what I was doing. And actually, before I started college, I went away to Namibia for a month to do this gap year thing. And it was amazing. And I had no phone. I had no way of contacting anyone. And Tom's 18th birthday was around that time. And I spent the whole month thinking about Tom, not the boyfriend that I had. And then when I came home, the boyfriend wasn't bothered about me starting Rose Bruford or me
and Rose Bruford is a theatre school, is that right?
Yeah, and he just wasn't bothered about any of that, didn't change his life in any way, and just carried on being him. Whereas Tom found it all fascinating, was writing me letters to my flat and just being adorable. And yeah, I don't even know, because it's not even like me and my ex had any big arguments. I just literally on the drive over to him one night, so I'd done the whole week in Sidcup, where the college is, and literally on the drive over to him on a Friday night, I just thought I'm breaking up with him tonight. It was just it was such a clear thing that I hadn't even thought about until that point. Mm. So I broke up with him, and Tom was straight away kind of going, come over to us. And I was like, no, I'm good. I'm going to go out with my sister and get really, really drunk. And then a couple of weeks later, I went over to his and and actually I met the band then who they'd started recording. And Dougie, when I first met him, he said, Tom talks about you nonstop.
Oh,
I was like, oh. So yes, we've been together now since we were 18 and I'm 36. So a long time now.
That's pretty cool. It's getting serious.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, I think things are serious these days.
I would also say that if you go away on a gap year trip to Namibia and you're not thinking about your boyfriend, you think about your ex, it's probably... There's some big clues there.
But that's before the thing, that drive isn't it? Over. But I think sometimes when, you know... With our phones and everything like that, and where life is so busy, when you're forced out of your comfort zone and you're somewhere else, thoughts that you wouldn't necessarily have had time and space to let in before suddenly come flooding in. And every year, actually, I do a charity trek with Copperfill.
Mm.
So we take 100 people, men and women, who have been affected by breast cancer or are just hitting a landmark age-wise and they're just like, I want to do something for me. We raise money and awareness for Copperfill. And it is absolutely incredible. And it's something that I wish everyone would do, just because it's that thing of taking you out of your comfort zone, putting you somewhere completely different, making you focus on something that is not your day-to-day.
Yeah.
And your mind and the conversations that you have, it's free to just do and say anything.
Yeah.
And so I love it. I love it when you're not focusing on anything other than what your feet are doing.
Yeah.
Because your mouth and your heart just kind of let loose a little bit.
Yeah, well, walks are good for that generally, aren't they? You can sort of...
Yeah.
I think as well, they say that... actually, it's quite good for older kids as well, that when you're walking, because you haven't got that eye-to-eye contact, so it's not at all confrontational. Yeah. And that can be quite a good time to get things out of the older kids as well, because you're both sort of focused on... There's a task at hand and it's quite gentle. And, you know, you're out in the open, so it's not going to turn nasty. And it's just, you know, quite a nice space, really.
Yeah.
When you had those breaks from Tom when you were younger, did you always kind of have it in the back of your mind that you were going to get back together?
I think so. So we stayed in touch the whole time.
Mm.
And he'd send me songs that he'd written, ones that were called things like Leap of Faith.
Or like, we're going to get back together one day.
I would meet up and there was always this thing.
Mm.
We split up around the same time that my parents split up. And I do think that, looking back, is completely connected.
Mm.
And, you know, I think in my head, the people that I look to as to see what a relationship was, they had fallen apart. So for us, and to be honest, my mum and dad are amazing now. They're great friends.
Mm.
We're so lucky. But I do think that kind of made me look at me and Tom a little bit. And I think I was going through a bit of a rebellious stage off the back of that. So we split up, but stayed in touch.
Yeah, maybe you needed it as well, you know?
I know, that's the thing, isn't it? Because so many people, that space that we had between 16 and 18, I know we weren't legally allowed to do lots of things, but we went to clubs, we did all those things and got drunk and had no responsibilities and we didn't need to check in with anyone. And so I do think that it was good for us to have that time apart.
Yeah. I wonder as well how it'll help you parent that bit of your kids' life that you've known each other since that time of your lives, because that's quite everybody kind of goes back and reflects on that time in their life when they get, you know, when you get to that point of having a teenager, you can't help it. You're not, you know, the amount of times I go, oh, I remember when I was 13, or, you know, this, you know, just, it just all comes flooding back. But being able to know each other really like properly at that time is actually quite unique, isn't it? For your mum and dad to be like, oh, do you remember when we did that? Like,
well, Tom at 13 was literally snogging every single girl in our class. Everyone. He snogged one girl before school, one girl in the morning break, one girl at lunchtime, one girl in the afternoon break, and one girl after school.
But now that you know that you got together properly, very like relatively soon after, you can see he was just, you know, this is that was his experience of like other women.
There we go.
13-year-old snogs. So he's got something to reflect on of like, hey, I'm experienced, you know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
But so you must have had about 11 years when it was just the two of you then, by my...
Yeah, we had a long time. Mm. And I do think there's that thing as well of when you do get together really, really young, I think it is, you forget that you're the ones that have to make the decision, the leaps to get engaged, get married, have kids. Mm. I don't know, I feel like when you get together older, you already know that that's what you want. You already know that that's where you are. And, you know, I think I was ready to get married and have kids a lot sooner than Tom was. I say I think, I know I was. You know, I was acting in the wife role in the house. We moved into this house when we were 21. Tom was 20, I was 21. So I had years of playing the wife, if you like, but not being the wife. And I think that did get to me a lot. And, you know, it's that thing of everyone would say, oh, when are you going to get married? And I think I found that quite frustrating, to be honest. But at the same time, I'm glad that it all panned out as it did, because, you know, if timings were slightly different, then maybe I wouldn't have started writing.
Yeah.
You know, I needed that extra little bit of time to get to that. So then the career was already kind of taking off before kids were on the cards, you know. So if it had gone any other way, then I definitely wouldn't be doing what I am now.
And was writing always the thing you wanted to do? What were you doing at Sylvia Young and...
Well, acting. I was doing acting and loved performing and singing. And so at Rose Bruford, I did an acting degree. I came out of there, did some plays and stuff, loved it. But then suddenly, following the recession, everything stopped and the jobs weren't filtering through. Mm-hmm. So I started doing book reviews for Heat magazine. Then I started working for a few different magazines, which is how we once met, when I was working on one magazine. And then because I was doing book reviews for Heat magazine and also for my own blog, I got invited to a book launch, and I met an agent, and she just said to me, have you ever thought about writing yourself? And I thought at the time, I was just a bit like, look, that's something that people that went to Oxford or Cambridge did, not someone who went to drama school and pretended to be a penguin in a field. That's a bit of a stretch.
You pretended to be a penguin, what, in a film?
In a field.
In a field, oh. Yeah. Wow, that's actually quite hard. How many actors could do that? Not many. You had to be a confused, overheating penguin.
And I used to, Tom laughs at me all the time, because my penguin would eat frankfurters cold. That every lesson that we had on
how
animal
often
studies.
How were you with the penguin?
A few times a week, yeah.
Is this that thing where you have to choose your animal and then stick to it?
Well, they give us our animals, yeah.
Oh, you got given an animal.
We got given an animal. We had to study them, stick to them. And then at the end of the term, we would be put in a zoo for the rest of the students to come around and sort of watch us, in our natural animal habitat.
Do they eat frankfurters in real life?
No, but they are my fish substitute.
Okay.
But I like the fact that you had to ask.
I was thinking I've never seen that happen, but you're the one who studied penguins. You're the expert here.
But they're a bit wobbly,
yes.
Like a fish, yeah. I thought. Plus, I think actually in my student haze, the thought of just eating frankfurters and having an excuse to do it,
right.
It was quite nice.
Oh, I get it now. So I didn't understand that the frankfurters were a real thing. I thought you meant that you were just imagining you were a penguin no. that liked frankfurters.
No,
I was like, wow, I didn't know you could improvise that.
They were a real thing
got
and
it,
a substitute for fish.
No, I can see it now. I understand now. Because if you hadn't done that, it would have been raw fish.
Yeah, exactly.
I see.
I don't think I was into sushi then. but yeah, so it was quite a leap going from being a penguin eating frankfurters to writing books. But I was talking to a different author one day, really randomly, who was just saying to me about other people that she'd met who, whenever she says that she's an author, they'd always say, oh, I'd love to be an author. I'd love to write a book. Mm. And her advice was always, well, just do it. And so I came away from that and I just thought, you know what? Let's just see what happens. So I wrote out three different summaries, sent them off to the agent that I'd talked to because she gave me her email address and just said, if you ever need any advice, let me know. And we spoke about it. One idea just seemed a bit stronger. Mm. So I started writing it. And then 16,000 words in, I think, she said that she'd like to represent me, which was amazing. And I just kept pushing through. And that's the amazing thing. At that time, we didn't have the responsibilities and anything like that. Mm. So I was able to just get on with it and pour a lot of love in. And there is something really wonderful about writing a first book because you don't have any expectation on yourself, any expectation on anyone else. All you're doing is storytelling, which is what every book should be, but it does, that leaves you, I think. It's like an album, you know, you know what the fans want, what the readers want, what the listeners want. So it does change. So I think first books are very, very different. And yeah, I mean, there were many rejection letters, but thankfully Penguin gave me my first 2-book deal. And I've been with them ever since, which is incredible.
That's amazing. And actually, I mean, from the outside looking in, I can totally see that you don't have to have gone to Oxbridge to think you can write. But actually, you're right about that thing of people saying, oh, I wish I could do that, and sort of feeling like it's somewhere else. And not everybody does take that leap of faith on themselves or feel like they've got the right time, actually. It does feel like quite a big undertaking to write a book.
Well, I think you can think that other people have the right skill set and that you don't have the right tools. But actually, as soon as I realised that, especially the books that I love to read, a lot of it is first person.
Mm.
A lot of it is a character telling a story.
Mm.
And if you can put yourself in someone's shoes and watch them walk and be them as they walk around. Like, I do a lot of acting out when I write, you know, how are people touching things? How are they feeling things, you know? So I think I probably write books in a way that works for me. Doesn't mean it works for everyone else. But then that's being creative as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think when things are creative and we're taught to paint by numbers, I think actually that sucks the joy out of everything.
Yeah.
And that's not why you're not a creative person to, you know, paint by numbers.
No, and I think, I know that, I mean, my mum, she didn't start writing until much, much later in life. So she signed a book deal when she was 60, which I thought was really cool because it was just really unexpected. Well, it made a lot of sense, but it was a nice new twist in, you know, what was going on with her. And she's a very natural writer. But she said that at the beginning, she had this feeling of like, how does an author act? What does a writer do? How do they go about their day? And then she realised, oh no, it can just be me. And I can factor in the things that I like to do and just make time for the writing and the way I want to do it. I think that's quite important to make that distinction really in your own head. It's your thing. No one's watching you when you're writing. You can just do it yourself.
Yeah. And I think the more people that you meet that who are writers and that write books, you find out that everyone has their own way of doing it.
Mm.
Some people have kids and they just bosh it out in that first term back at school. That's the first edit. They'll bosh that out and then spend some time like finessing it afterwards.
Mm.
Other people are even quicker than that. And, you know, I've got one friend who will write 10,000 words a day on a first draft just to work out what her structure is and whether that goes into a first draft or whether that gets chucked away. You know, I think it varies every time. I would say I'm quite a slow writer. I'm a slow writer, but I've got a target every day of, well, 2,000 words. So it's slow, but I guess I keep going until I get that target done.
Yeah.
But yeah, Yeah, and I think once you realise that everyone's got their own way of doing things, it's really freeing.
Yeah. And how does your confidence grow when you've done more than one book?
Second book is a nightmare. Second book is horrible because you have that expectation, you know, and anything, like writing anything that's a little bit saucy, I'd kind of go, my dad's going to read this, because my dad's one of, like, you know, one of my biggest fans. So I was just a bit like, oh, I can't. Because if he reads it, even though it's the character saying it, he knows that I wrote it and therefore it's in my head. And oh my God. But once you get rid of that, and also there's that thing of, I always felt like with the second book, my publishers would realise that it was a total fluke, first book. You know, and I spent my advance on bookshelves, being the nerd that I am. It was behind me in like this nice wooden bookshelves carrying books. And I thought, oh my God, if they ask me for my advance back, I won't be able to give it to them back because they're bookshelves now. So I think I panicked a lot when it came to second book. And loads of friends I know were exactly the same. Like me and Dorno Porter actually were writing second books around the same time. And we kept messaging each other about getting on a plane to Mexico and just leaving, you know. So it's good to know that it's not that you're not on your own. And I always said that by the time I got to the third book, I would say that I was an actual author. But now I am definitely, definitely an author.
And did the acting bug ever come back into your life? Is that still
I've done little bits. I did a Christmas Carol in London, which was absolutely incredible. And then Tom put the Christmasaurus on stage at the Apollo, which was amazing. So we did a run a few Christmases ago before Max was born. And I absolutely would love to
do it. I remember
that
being on. I didn't realise you were acting in it.
Yeah. So Tom was in it, I was in it. Tom's sister Carrie was in it. Harry was in it. Matt Willis was in it. Just great fun. So it was that mixture of kind of us being us, but also then becoming the characters and telling the story, which was great. And so that was great fun. And I do think it is something that I will go back to at some point. And the great thing about acting is that there are always lots of different characters of lots of different ages.
Yeah.
And I feel like I am using my creativity in a different way right now. But there's nothing like it. You know, like when I take the podcast on tour and there's an audience, there's nothing like speaking and getting a reaction.
Yeah,
I just
the
think
podcast
it's great.
Is huge. I mean, is that something, how did you get started into all that? What prompted you starting your podcast?
So I was... So I was writing fiction, and then when I was going on tour with that, people started asking me whether I'd ever think about writing nonfiction and write about being a mum. And I guess I was sharing honestly online, and I had a blog on Hello for a while that was all about pregnancy and then becoming a mum. I was sharing honestly, which I felt wasn't there so much in that space. I felt like everything was just amazing in motherhood. I didn't feel like what I was experiencing was being reflected. You know, I felt like everything was like crisp white sheets and big smiles. And I was there with, you know, dribbly boobs and, you know, just not the same picture as everyone else. So I started talking honestly about it. And my first thing when people started asking whether I'd ever write nonfiction was a bit like, I don't know how I'd add to the narrative. I don't know how I'd add to what is already there, because you've got so many books that give you advice that's conflicting, you know, that you feel terrible if you don't follow. Like, I bought Gina Ford.
Oh, God. Yeah. Me too. Well, I was given it, actually. What a great present.
Oh,
Stress in manuscript form. Thanks for that.
Exactly. So I read that and was just like, this is just too stressful. Like, because you're not, it takes away any actual listening to your baby, anything like that.
Yeah, it's maybe miserable.
It just makes you, it makes you feel like such a failure.
Yeah.
So I just thought, look, if I'm going to write a book about being a mum, what is it? And I just thought, writing a book about my experiences from an honest point of view without trying to edit anything out or making myself look like a good mum, just being completely honest, warts and all, I thought that was the kind of book that I would love to write. So after that, I took that on tour, and it was incredible, the conversations that we had. And I didn't want it to end there. I think so often with books, they can have their time and then everyone moves on. And I felt like it was a bigger conversation than that. And I wanted that conversation to keep going for new mums and mums that just need that extra bit of support. So I thought to myself, I'd love to do a podcast. And by that point, I was really into Emma Gannon's podcast and The Guilty Feminist. Like, so many great podcasts I was listening to. And I just thought that would be a great place to have those conversations, but not about me. Let's invite other people on. So the first series I sent out, actually the first series I did just a pilot with Emma Willis, and she was really reluctant to say yes.
Why do you think that was? Because she was concerned about people hearing how she felt about things.
I think she's private about her family life anyway, but also she left me a voicemail she just ignored me, which is very and then we were out for her birthday and I mentioned it and she was like, the thing is, I know I struggle sometimes, but... You know, it was kind of like, I know I struggle and I know I might have moments where it's all a bit too much and I cry, but you know, I also have a great husband, a great house, a great support network. I can't moan about it. And I was like, no, but that's the reason why. It's not about moaning. It's about saying it doesn't matter who you are, what you have. Yeah. We all experience so many of the same things, and our feelings of being failures in motherhood is so universal. It's something that everyone feels at times. And the more we speak about it, the more we're able to break down that whole thing and make and support mums and completely change it. And a few years in, actually, about a year in, I heard the statistic that the leading cause of death in new mums is suicide. And that is just another push of why we keep going, another push why we keep doing the virtual event. Motherhood throws up so many different emotions and feelings. And the more that we talk about it, the better. I feel like, you know, before having Buzz, I thought I was the most maternal person ever. And then he came into our lives. And that first 3 weeks, I just thought, I've not got a maternal bone in my body. I was trying to do Gina Ford. I was trying to listen to every bit of advice that I'd ever been given. And, you know, I honestly had that thought of, can I send him back? I've made a mistake, you know, and actually it's awful now looking back, but knowing that other people feel the same thing, you're like, well, that's fine. Cause it's an overwhelming time. I didn't, you know, he was safe. Nothing happened. I was fine. But I think if that was a mum who then that was continuous and that stuck around, I just think, if conversations with other parents can help mums and be that support, whether they're feeling like that, whether they're feeling low, or whether they just need a bit of support and words from other people going through similar situations, I think it's really important.
Absolutely. I also think there's still a lot of judgment about how it's assumed that other people do live. And like you say, it's about showing that actually a lot of what people deal with day to day is very similar. There's lots of universal truths about what can happen when you become a parent. And so you said that it was the first 3 weeks that you felt this sort of sense of not feeling like you were maternal. What happened after the 3 weeks that made you things start to get better, do you think?
I think for us, feeding was a massive thing. Although I would say that about 3 months in, that suddenly clicked into place. But he wasn't sleeping very well. Feeding would take an hour and a half, and then you feed 3 hours after the start of a feed. So if it takes him an hour and a half to feed and wind and change him, then you've got an hour and a half sleep before you're up and doing it all again. Mm-hmm. And I think it was that lack of sleep, that feeling of being overwhelmed by this huge task, feeling like I should know what my baby needed and not knowing, I think it was just everything. I think sleep has a huge part to play in it.
Yes. Surprising, really, is it? It sends you doolally if you haven't had enough sleep.
Completely.
Absolutely. It's like torture. It's literally used as torture, in fact.
But you get through it. And I think actually now, when they're sort of toddlers and stuff, and then there's a sleepless night, you just kind of go, whoa, how did I even do that when they were newborns? Because one night off kilter can change so much about how you function the next day.
Yeah, definitely. No, and I think those conversations around motherhood, it is good that they're shifting, because it's funny you mentioned the Gina Ford thing, because I feel like books in a way have taken a little bit of longer to catch up with the conversation that new parents have been having, actually, because when I had my first, nearly 17 years ago, all the books were quite sort of medical and quite very pragmatic, and not a lot of room for things that fell outside of the typical, I felt. So, you know, if things weren't going the way to the letter of how things were planned,
I felt like I'd sort of fallen out of that margin, and there wasn't really a lot picking me back up and going, don't worry if that's happened to you, or if your baby's doing this. And I think having that scope for the personality of the parent, the personality of the baby, things not going as they meant to, but good intentions all round, you know, just scooping you up a little bit so you just feel like it's okay, something's got my back here.
Yeah.
It's really isolating. That was sort of the main emotion I felt with my first.
And I think feel like probably, things have changed as you've gone through?
Oh, massively.
Or is it your experience?
I think if I'd seen a mum like me when I had my first, like prancing around doing discos at home with like the five kids, I'd have thought, I will never, ever get to that point. Never. Because I couldn't function barely at all with the first one. And I felt very cut off. And I felt like I didn't really see very many people. It was sort of my mum on hotline, and none of my friends had kids at that point. So,
yeah.
I mean, it must be the same for you, do you think, with having three now? A very different picture to having just one, isn't it?
Yeah, completely different. But it's that weird thing where it's really chaotic. It's very, very loud. But at the same time, I've got a few friends who have given birth for the first time in the last year. And it does, you know, the voice notes and things that you get and I always check in and see how they are.
Yeah.
But when you hear one of your friends who have become mums for the first time crying, it just takes you back.
Yes.
Because, you know, I think the chaos and everything that happens now is at a different level to a newborn. Mm. When everything is so raw and so messy and you want everything to be perfect and you think everything should be perfect. And it's that beginning journey, I think, of realizing that you're never going to be the perfect mum, ever. But you're going to be the right mum for your kids and what your kids need. So to get rid of all the other noise that's going on around it. I think hearing other new mums talking about it, it does just take you back and it makes you go, oh yeah, we've come a long way, kids, as Take That say.
Definitely. And that sort of fearlessness that you talked about with doing I'm a Celebrity, and the fact that you were talking about, you know, returning to acting and the writing and all the things, do you feel like you sort of, that motherhood has kind of helped that progression to just feeling like, actually, I'll do what things if I feel like I want to do them?
I think so. I mean, I guess the last year has been a bit difficult because we've had to juggle everything. But certainly before that, I think the year that I had Buddy was my busiest work year ever, you know, and there's definitely that sense of wanting to take opportunities as they come and make the most of it. And like we were saying, whenever you're not with them, making sure that you're being as productive as possible and that the work that you're doing is good and making it count. So, I think it has changed the way I look at things work-wise. And also, I kind of, like, things like I'm a Celeb, I want that for me is a little bit of me. As you know, and I think, you know, you when you become a mum, that's so all-encompassing and yourself gets chucked away a little bit. And I feel like now that, you know, we're slowly coming to that stage now where, you know, most of the stair gates are gone, nappies are on their way out, dummies have gone, cots have gone, and we're coming out the other side and I find myself going, who am I? What do I like? Where do I fit in a way? And for me, I'm a Celeb definitely was that. I think the last few years, my body has just aches, my joints and everything are completely shot. And for me, it was a chance to kind of just sit and just be me, not having to dart around and be everything to everyone every second of the day.
Yeah. Did it feel weird doing that in the middle of the pandemic thing as well? Like, that's quite a strange juxtaposition, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. it was really, really strange. But, and also though, I did say to myself, if I was ever going to do it, doing it after, in a year that we've been together, for months and months and months solidly. That was probably the best year. It was not a year to feel guilty about leaving at all. They've had maximum mum time in 2020. So yeah, that definitely didn't make me.
And you weren't in Australia. You would exactly. have had to go for much longer actually. So that's yeah. good as well.
Yeah. I mean, they probably would have had a nice holiday off the back of it, but.
Is that what you do then? Do you take them all with you? Are they there the whole time?
They fly out once you're in. So you go out on your own, they fly out once you're in, and they get to stay in a nice hotel.
Hmm. Yeah, that's not too bad. Yeah, you're right. I think my kids would probably say thumbs up to that. Actually, they want me to do it. I mean, is it something that you surprised yourself in doing, or did you always quite like the program? And
I've always loved the show.
It's a good
always
program, isn't it?
It's so good. I'd say that and Bake Off are my two favourite shows. When they're on, I watch them.
Yeah.
Like, I drop everything and watch them. So I've always absolutely loved it. I love just the fact that it's, obviously they have a few years where there are dramas, but on the whole, it's drama-free. Mm-hmm. It's all about the tasks. It's all about them just living in this strange environment. So I think I knew what I was letting myself in for to an extent. I didn't know what Wales was going to be like. Honestly, I would just say to anyone who's asked to do it, do it. It was the best experience ever. And that's what something that all 12 of us would say.
Yeah, I've heard nothing of that from everybody that's done it.
Yeah. And that is, yeah. I mean, it's one of those shows that everyone will come away from and just say, it was an amazing experience. And I think it highlights how accessible we are in everyday life. And I think before going in, you kind of worry about, well, I'm going to be filmed all the time and that's really intrusive. But it makes you realise how life is actually quite intrusive. You know, we can't go anywhere without watches or phones bleeping at us,
yeah,
or emails going off. And then an hour later, someone asking why you've not emailed back, or kids wanting something. You're always going at 50 miles, like 100 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour. It is fast, but it's not fast enough. 100 miles an hour.
16 miles an hour.
walking pace. You're always going at a walking pace, getting everything done. I think it's a lesson actually in what you think is going to be really intrusive. It makes you realise that life actually demands so much of you, and there's something so beautiful. And for us, you know, they decide to, you start giving each other jobs. So you're only allowed to do one thing. So at first, I was literally running around and doing everything. Everyone was really, everyone wanted to do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I felt like a scullery maid at times, just kind of shuffling through the castle and stuff. But and then once you're given a job, so me and Mo were put on cooking, and that's all we could do. We could only cook.
Yeah.
So you have to chill out a bit. You have to be present. And I found the biggest lesson for me is that I can so often feel like I am part of the experience of, say, being at home, but realising that I'm actually on the periphery.
Yeah.
So I can be washing up and listening to the kids and Tom having a wonderful time. Mm. And I feel like I'm enjoying it because I'm hearing their laughter and whatever else, but I'm not in it.
Mm.
I'm enjoying it from afar. And actually, it made me realise that I need to start being in it a lot more.
And how was it for Tom, with you having such a significant experience that didn't directly involve him? Did that feel at all peculiar or
yeah,
not really?
I guess so. I think the one thing that the families really missed out on this time is that they weren't all connected in the same way that they would have been in Australia, because when they're in Australia, they're all in the same hotel. They all get on the bus every morning and go down to see who's going to be, you know, leaving and stuff. Whereas this time, you know, we should have all asked for production, put them in a WhatsApp group or something just so that they all felt supported. We should have done that. So yeah, I think it was strange. But I mean, he took over all of my social media stuff. And so I feel like he was really involved. And our first chat, I got in the car and I had my phone and I got in the car to go to the hotel. And our first chat consisted of about 10 minutes just laughing down the phone at the whole thing. And I come out with it. I can't wait for restrictions and later on in the year when we can all the campmates can get back together and our families can get together. Because we've all gone through something, and it must be strange knowing that your partner's gone through an experience, that partner that you know and have experienced most of your life with has gone through something so significant, and you're not involved in some way. But then we also have Zooms. So we have Zooms all together, and, you know, Tom will always pop in and chat with everyone. And as far as the campmates feel, we all feel like we know all the partners or all the families, all the kids and everything. So I think we've come out And they've all been, they're all part of our club now.
I've just realised that's your jacket, isn't it, hanging up in the background?
Yeah. Wasn't technically meant to take that.
Really? You're supposed to give it back?
Yeah, you meant to give everything back other than your hat and your boots.
Well, who else is going to wear that? Put your name on it. That's fine. I say
and
that's
also,
fine.
It's so vile. It's so dirty. It's terrible. I did think about washing it because it does smell of smoke from the campfire. And there's something quite nice about keeping it as it is.
That's sweet and quite strange too. I did a couple more things to ask you and then I will let you go on your merry way. But I did wonder, because you have a flip of me that obviously you and Tom have been together for a really long time before you become parents, as Richard and I hadn't been together very long at all. And I did wonder, when you've known each other that whole time, is it quite strange to see each other become parents together in that way?
Yeah, because you're going through an experience. Yeah, because you feel like you know each other completely.
Yeah.
And then parenthood comes along and you're tired on a different level and, situations arise that you have never dealt with before and you have to deal with them as a couple. I feel like we're far more frazzled now that we're parents. Mm. And in terms of our relationship, we definitely have to make more of an effort, especially at this stage where I feel like it's so intense. Mm. You know, once they are starting to become a little bit more independent, well, even just going back to school, all them being at school, I think that would change things massively. I feel like our relationship is definitely in two halves, pre-kids and with kids.
And what about with the band? Is that, because obviously McFly must have had their massive success pre-kids as well when they got started. Do you think that was easier to deal with that already being quite an established beast by the time the kids came along?
I think so, because we'd done so many tours and stuff and even as a partner, you know, I can remember the first tour that they went on wanting to go to the whole thing and Tom sort of saying, well, what one night would you like to come to? And you're like, what? I can't come. And then, you know, as years go on, you go on a tour and you realise, oh, it's actually a little bit boring. It's not my gig. And I'm just following someone around. So your whole perception on how things work change. And actually, Buzz was born 4 weeks before the first McBusted tour. So what was lovely is that we could go on tour with Tom as much as possible. And we did it so that we stayed in one spot in Manchester for a couple of weeks. And so Tom would do gigs and then go back to Manchester and be with us and kind of crisscross around the country a little bit.
This is when you just had a newborn when that was all happening.
Yeah. Which was nice in a way, because being in a hotel with a newborn, that, you know, especially trying to breastfeed and stuff, it got rid of trying to be a super mum and be prepared for everyone to pop in at any moment. And, you know, it was just lots of time with your boobs out, basically, on a hotel bed, trying to get it right.
That happens in a lot of hotel rooms, but...
Yeah, so I guess that was great. And it's so lovely now. So obviously, the band had McBusted for a couple of years and then they've had McFly. So now the older two have both been to a McFly gig. And it's so gorgeous, because obviously they did have a hiatus where nothing was going on, but it's so gorgeous seeing our kids look at Tom on stage and seeing that other side of him, because they all, you know, they play their guitars and their drums and stuff and they all, you know, have a little jam all together and it's absolutely adorable. But, yeah, it is pretty incredible watching their faces.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think, and for Tom as well, I know that, with Richard, he said that when, you know, he was growing up, he always had this idea that one day if he had a kid, they'd be, you know, having them, if he managed to make it as a musician, having them see that happen.
Yeah.
Be able to have them side a stage.
Yeah.
Is really special. So I think that's probably really lovely for Tom too, just looking at and seeing their faces and...
Yeah.
Like, here I am.
They already think that he's absolutely amazing. Like, Tom is such... He has surpassed my expectations of what he would be like. And actually, I would say the first year of having Buzz, because of McBusted, he was away a lot. And actually, well, the first 2 years then, because when Buddy came along, he was home much more. So I think that's how things have evolved in us doing a lot of it 50-50. And there's some stuff that Tom is just so much better at than me. And the flip side is I'm better at other things. Like Tom, when... when Buddy was first born, so when he was a newborn, Tom would happily take the two of them out together and not bat an eyelid if one of them was crying or whatever. Whereas for me, it took me 6 months to work up the courage to take both of them out at the same time.
Yeah.
And I wonder if part of that is also because I was breastfeeding and I felt like if one of them went, like if the toddler was running off and I was like, what do you do? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it took me a long time to kind of work up that courage, whereas he's always been a little bit more relaxed about stuff.
You know what, Rich, is the same. I wonder as well if when you've had a baby, it's almost like you just feel like that bit more vulnerable, like your skin's a bit thinner, you know? So if something does go a bit wrong, I just felt like I'd probably just burst into tears.
Yeah, and I was always getting mum sweats.
Sorry?
I was always getting mum sweats.
Well, it's also really hard, just the pressure of checking them all the time. And then when there's two, you just think, I don't know, what if that one runs off there and I've got to, feed that one. It just feels like insurmountable pressure.
Yeah.
To get it right.
Yeah.
And some of that doesn't really, I don't think that changes if you have end up having more. I think that's just, it just gets harder, actually, some of that stuff. I remember when I had my second one, I thought, oh, it's going to be fine. I've already got one. It's just more of the same. And it's not, actually. It's sort of double the
so
work.
So what about
sometimes.
Five, though?
That's just silly, really, isn't it?
On reflection.
Especially when that lockdown started, I just thought, because, you know, I felt quite capable in terms of having another baby, and I loved just to have, you know, having another small one and a big one. I felt quite clever at first, but then when everything was, you know, rug was pulled completely, I just thought, oh, I've been such a mug. Like, how do I do this? How do I, you know, reassure them and keep the house tip-top and keep them all happy and healthy and not have us, you know, shouting at each other all the time?
Yeah.
You kind of muddle through, though. You sort of find your rhythm. But yeah, that first lockdown is, when I look back at pictures or anything, you know, pops up in like a memory thing, I'm just like, that was a weird time, definitely.
When you had a lot of kids to homeschool.
Yes. Well, for a little while, it felt like we were just running a very small private school that wasn't very successful, you know, not results driven, I wouldn't have said. The teachers open to bribery.
Snack driven.
In fact, yeah, teachers that didn't really want to be teachers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's probably what wasn't very successful. But yeah, we've made it through. And they're all back at school, so yay! In fact, I don't know if you can see on your computer, but I'm caked in makeup.
Because I saw on Instagram. You had a photo shoot
earlier. And there's like, honestly, there's nothing more ridiculous than having something nice, like some, you know, having your hair and makeup done, then like nowhere to go except for a virtual parents' evening. So I spoke to like 10 teachers just before we were speaking, and with everyone, I had to start off by sort of apologising for having this yellow and blue eyeshadow on. Yeah, but it's just a little bit garish for parents' evening, but it's like, I want to go out. This is not what I envisaged.
Yeah.
But talking of the visual side of things, your wallpaper is gorgeous. I really love your wallpaper.
Thank you. I love a bit of floral.
It's really beautiful.
Also, so this is my office. So I've got everything. I've got
a
pink
door. You have an
office.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Ah. I mean, it always gets invaded with toys and stuff.
Did it help during the last year, though, from working from home, that you had a space that was yours?
No, because we couldn't really go into our spaces because we had three little humans to referee. I don't know whether I feel like I spend a lot of my time refereeing.
Mm.
And, you know, I think those little wins, our little wins is one child going to the other, you can have this toy. That feels
an
like such
kindness.
A win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you ever have any silly comments for having all boys? Like, I've had tons of them. I don't know if you...
Oh, yeah. All the time. Did people assume you were going again for a girl?
Yes. And I've said since the second baby, the best thing about having a girl would be that people would stop asking me if that's what I'm trying to have. But actually, when I had my fourth during pregnancy, I started keeping notes of the stupid comments because they were so frequent. Like, people I didn't know coming up to me and being like, oh, you should have had a hot bath after sex because that would have killed off the X or Y chromosome or whatever it is. You know,
I'm like,
I don't even know who you are, random man. I had lots of strange comments. Even my own doctor, my GP, when I went to see her and I said, I think I'm about 7 weeks pregnant. And she said, okay, let's fill out, you know, the form for the hospital. She said, oh, that's funny. It's asking me for the sex of the baby. And I said, oh, you should probably just write boy. It probably will be. And she went, oh, well, you'll have to get a bitch dog. I said, I'm sorry. She went, we have to get a bitch dog if you have another boy. I was like, what a weird comment. What a weird comment, doctor. Anyway, yeah.
It is a weird thing. And I think Yeah, I think there is always that assumption, oh, you're going for a girl, going again, you're going for a girl, oh, you must be so disappointed that you've got another boy. But every child, they're so different. And so I just felt overwhelmingly lucky and grateful to have three kids who are here, and they are, you know, brilliant. And I feel overwhelmingly lucky to be in a situation that I am. And I, you know, we always say that we're done at three, but if we were ever to go again, it would be for another child, not a girl.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
And
as well,
also, it's that thing, isn't it? Once you have a certain amount of one sex, it's highly unlikely that you're going to have the other.
I don't know if that's true though, because how do they know what's going on though? That it's like,
I think it's like statistics, math statistics, I think.
Yeah, but if I flipped a coin and I flipped a head like five times in a row, you wouldn't say, I think you're unable to flip tails, would you?
That's very true.
It's just probability, isn't it? Like, it's just 50-50 each time.
Yeah.
I would imagine. And I am a scientist, so... I'm actually an expert, so good. Yeah, you've asked me and I've told you, so that's fine. Well, I think I should let you go with your nice wallpaper in your quiet office. How has it been being interviewed for another parenting podcast?
It's been lovely, really, really lovely. It's been strange being the one asked the questions.
You snuck in a few questions yourself, but I kept you on a fairly tight leash. It's okay. Ah, see, she's very lovely. You probably knew that already, but it was nice to speak to her, and her wallpaper really was that nice. It was kind of all roses, and I think I'm a little bit obsessed with looking at people's interiors. I mean, look, we've all been doing it, haven't we, when we watch people on Zoom on the telly and that kind of thing. I think, oh, look at the background. But I think at the moment, because I'm doing bits in the house, so I'm a bit fascinated by people's decor, and I'm stealing what I can. I think Giovanna to run with Savannah speaks really well about the importance of being open about everybody's route into motherhood and whatever that means to them. But also, you know, that thing I come back to a lot about the real importance of having something that's your own. And obviously, you do not need to be a parent for that to resonate. It's very easy to get a bit lost in the wash. And it's also incredibly easy as an adult to find you stop doing things that challenge you or shake things up a little bit. And there's one thing I'm very grateful to my job for, that it has, you know, thrown things my way that are completely unexpected. And obviously for Giovanna, it was going and doing I'm a Celebrity, which everybody seems to come out of raving about, don't they? It's kind of tempting. My kids would like me to do it, but I'm not sure. I think there's bits that I quite enjoy. I think I could probably do all right with, I'm not too bad with rats and snakes. Anyway, I'm going off on a bit of a tangent now. But it's funny because I started off singing, and then through my singing, I've ended up doing things like eating crisps in zero gravity and delivering beer on a cherry picker and dancing a paso doble. So, you know, I'm fortunate to do things that scare me. And I can see that to Giovanna, it meant a lot that she could just be herself and be her own person and not always be someone's wife, someone's mother. You know, they're important things, but you need something that's your own too. Anyway, the margarita is made, the DJ decks are ready, it's Saturday night, I'm talking to you with ridiculously high platform heels on. I can only wear block heels now. I don't think I will go back to stilettos. That's my lockdown take. What is the point of the spindly ones? They just hurt. Anyway, thanks for joining me. This series has got another three left, and then I'll be recording the fourth series. So please do start leaving me some tips of who you'd like me to speak to. I always find that really helpful, and I have approached a lot of the women that you do suggest. And I won't trail who's coming next week, because I've put my foot in it more than once with saying the person and then changing it. But I will tell you, it won't disappoint you, because I've got some really wicked ones coming your way. Anyway, I'm going to stop rambling now, even though it comes so naturally to me. Thanks for joining me again. See you soon. Lots of love. Have a good week, and speak to you soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.